This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. There is a large urban Appalachian population in the Cincinnati area, more than 500,000 people, along with deeply rooted traditions. Along with that also comes some unique struggles, such as preservation of culture and job availability. And joining us to talk about Appalachia, its rich culture and community, and its challenges, our founding director of the Urban Appalachian Community Coalition in Cincinnati, and head of the Appalachian Area Office of Catholic Social Services of Southwestern Ohio, Mike Maloney, leader of the Urban Appalachian Community Coalition Arts Community, poet laureate of Cincinnati, and author of books related to urban Appalachia, Pauletta Hansel, and president of the Appalachian Studies Association and conference chair for the ASA's 2018 conference, Debbie Zorn, and composer Nate May, who has a new composition titled State, A Testimony to Urban Appalachia. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Nate, Mike, Debbie, and Pauletta, thank you for joining us today. Good
thank
to see
you.
Everybody.
Glad to be here.
Glad to be here.
Appalachia extends from the southern New York to northern Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia. But more than these geographic boundaries, Mike, I've heard Appalachia referred to as a cultural region. Can you explain what that means?
Well, we sure can't say that there's a uniform culture throughout all those 420 counties that the government considers Appalachia. Most people, when they think of Appalachian culture, are thinking of central and southern Appalachia, the area where you can find a distinct accent, and a lot of people from Scotch, Irish, and Anglo-Saxon heritage. But it's a very diverse region in terms of national origin and racial and ethnic background. Still, the music, the accent, the way of thought sometimes, and we're certainly not all the same, but there's a rich literature, for example, and all kinds of art forms like dance and musical forms, and as Pauletta exemplifies, poetry.
But it sounds like, to some extent, it might be hard to put a specific definition on what it means to be Appalachian.
Right. We've quit using a list of traits, because those are just positive stereotypes that we created to defend ourselves against the negative stereotypes that are so often used, like, violent, lazy, drunken.
Wow.
Don't wear seatbelts. The don't wear seatbelts is pretty true, by the way.
I think that's true among a lot of us, though, not just folks who are Appalachian.
But we don't drink any more than anybody else. But the drunkenness is like it was for the Irish as part of the stereotype. But we drink about the same as other Americans.
Debbie, how tough is it to get past some of these stereotypes that people have about Appalachians?
How tough is it? I don't hear a lot of them. And maybe it's because I close my ears to it, but we tend to focus on the positives and the cultural things that mean a great deal to us in terms of our connections with other Appalachians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some of the strengths of the Appalachian community?
Strengths, deep connections with family, deep connections with place. Those of us who are part of the families who have migrated from Central Appalachia still have connections to our ancestral homes in Eastern Kentucky, West Virginia, and places like that.
Mm-hmm. 513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation. And Nate, you've actually done a musical composition about Appalachia, called State, a Testimony to Urban Appalachia. What is that? Describe that to us and tell us about why you created that.
Sure. State is, I've been calling it an oratorio. It's about a 35-minute work that was sung by Kate Wakefield and the Muse, Cincinnati Wind Choir, as well as accompanied by percussion and piano. It just premiered April 16th and 17th in the Sanctuary in Lower Price Hill. And all of the text for the music came out of an oral history project I did through a fellowship with the Berea College Appalachian Sound Archives. So basically, I just went around and collected stories from urban Appalachians in Cincinnati and turned that into a big piece of music.
So Cincinnati had an influence on the creation of State.
Absolutely. I mean, it was all of the stories come from Cincinnati, and it was created here. Yeah.
When you were working on this, did you have as one of your goals that you wanted to really make this an honest representation of Appalachians?
Yes. I've been particularly using that word honest because there is such a history of skewed representation of Appalachians. And I know that nothing I create can be a complete representation, but I would like to at least make it honest.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Paulette, Cincinnati's got a pretty rich history, doesn't it, when it comes to Appalachia?
Oh, it certainly does. And, you know, Mike is talking about the wide range of Appalachia, both geographically and culturally. And in Cincinnati in particular, we were a place where folks migrated from some very specific areas, primarily of Appalachia, and that would include eastern Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia to a certain degree, southern Ohio to a certain degree. And, you know, you pretty much find if you go into any community within Cincinnati, and I use the word community broadly, not just neighborhoods, but also sort of community of interest or choice, you're going to find that anywhere from a quarter to a half of the folks in that community have roots in Appalachia. My mother, for example, has recently moved into a nursing home, and really about half of the people in the unit where she is are from Appalachia, from Kentucky, West Virginia, southern Ohio. I find that really everywhere I go, that people may not necessarily identify with the word Appalachia, but they identify with place, with connection with family, with connection with rural roots, with connection with mountains to a certain degree, if it's folks from, you know, like me, from further down in Kentucky. Perhaps some coal background, you know, families who have worked in the coal industry or who have been farmers. So I think the effect of Appalachian people and Appalachian culture in the greater Cincinnati area can be somewhat invisible. Mike has used the term invisible minority to explain who Appalachians are, but it's still very tangible, and people know it even if they don't know the words. When you think about bluegrass music in the area, when you think about the history of oral storytelling, of crafts within the Cincinnati area, that much of that has come from the Appalachian people and culture.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Steve in Western Hills. Hi, Steve.
How you doing? I'm very familiar with the Appalachian people. My wife has worked for the Appalachian community, for many years. And when she started, I started looking at my family history, and my mother used to use the HB word. I don't like it. It's hillbilly. But I looked at mine, found out my dad was from West Virginia, his family. Now, I had a secretary working for me, and she had a bit of a southern draw, but she was from Cleveland. Hmm. I asked her where her family was from. She said, West Virginia. I said, you're an Appalachian. She said, I ain't no damn hillbilly. So I just...
At least I got a sense of humor about it.
Yeah, well, I tell you what. I think people need to be proud of their heritage. Mm-hmm. And I am. My wife is. And I get so angry when people use that HB word.
Yeah.
To me, it's like the N-word.
Well,
and I think we need to get away from that. And this last event we had down Lower Price Hill was the Appalachian Mini Festival, and it was a success, and I loved it. But we weren't allowed to use the word Appalachian on any of the signs or anything because the Lower Price Hill Community Council gave us $500. They claim that there's other cultures in there that are other, you know, are other cultures, and Appalachian might offend them. Well, I don't believe that, and I believe that's playing with a little bit of discrimination. But on the other hand, let me say this before I hang up. The Appalachian are many communities and cultures come together in peace and harmony for over 200 years. Now, you had your Hatfields and McCoys and that, but they got along great. And some of them old home remedies we use came from the Native Americans.
Okay,
Mike,
Steve.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Mike, it sounds like his description, it's a lot of different cultures coming together. That sounds something like what you were talking about earlier.
That's true, and that doesn't mean that we didn't have our bloody periods. You know, under Andrew Jackson, some of the Native Americans were removed to Oklahoma. We did have some slavery in the mountains, though it wasn't as extensive as it was in the Flatland South. We try to be honest about our history. But Steve kind of raises the question. We still have to fight for inclusion occasionally. The Child Poverty Task Force that's been created, for example, we had to kind of make an effort to get included even on the edges of that. So I'm convinced if we didn't have an active organization, we'd be forgotten. And every group knows that. You know, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is the advocacy group for Hispanics in Cincinnati, and we're the advocacy groups. But we're not just an angry group seeking inclusion. We want to make sure that all the voices in our community get heard, whether it's an artist like Nate or Pauletta, or, you know, someone who's a good quilt maker or wants to become a good quilt maker, people interested in all aspects of our culture and history, some of which we are very proud of and some we're not so proud of. So we invite everybody who's interested to be part of what we're doing.
Nate, what did you think of what Steve had to say? Because I think you're from West Virginia as well. And I think you've had some similar experiences about when people use certain stereotypes and words. What did you think?
That's right. I was interested in what he said about the word hillbilly, because I know a lot of people do take offense to that word. But there's also been a movement among Appalachians, I think, to reclaim some of those words that have been used against them. I've taken a particular interest in the hip-hop that's happening in Appalachia. And there's, within hip-hop, which is a medium that has done a lot of reclaiming of words, reappropriating, the hip-hop that's coming from the region is actually using words like hick and hillbilly and redneck and wearing them kind of as badges of pride. And I think that's an interesting alternative to taking offense to them, is just basically turning them around and saying that they identify with them and that there's really nothing wrong with being a hillbilly or being a redneck.
Paula, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that is interesting to me as someone who's lived in Cincinnati for, oh gosh, more than 30 years now. I can't even count the years, but who grew up in Eastern Kentucky and still have strong family roots there, is that I do think there's a difference between claiming those words for yourself when you are mainly among yourself, within the region itself, you know, using words like hillbilly and hick, and when you're in Cincinnati, when those words can so easily be misunderstood and used against you. And there's probably also generational differences, you know, and sort of in listening to Nate and listening to Steve, I'm imagining there's generational differences between them. And folks who may have come here in the 40s and 50s and 60s and even 70s when there was a lot of sort of pushback and prejudice against Appalachians to a certain degree because maybe we were taking jobs or folks thought we might be taking jobs versus people who may have come here a little bit later, like me, for example, in the 80s, and like I imagine Nate, who came with a stronger sense of Appalachian pride and a sense of cultural heritage already, that there may be some difference in how those words feel based on what your experience of being called Appalachian or hillbilly has been.
Yeah, if I can follow up on that, I think that's a great point about the generational differences. And I'm thinking about another one of my kind of sources for this notion about the reappropriation, which is when I was teaching a few years ago, I taught high school for a little bit in Fayette County, West Virginia. And I brought up that subject with my students there. And they were almost uniformly not offended by any of those words. With the exception of hick, some of them sort of still took offense to the word hick, but the other ones had sort of just gotten comfortable with that. And it would have been interesting to kind of replicate that study among people of an earlier generation.
Yeah. So I don't know, and Debbie, I don't know with the Appalachian Studies Association, the kind of linguistics around what Appalachia is called has been kind of an interesting conversation there too, I imagine.
I think that scholars have kicked that around for a while, and the generational shift is very interesting to me. You know, one thing that we're actually talking about for as we're beginning to plan for this conference that we're going to have in 2018 is doing a combined square dance hip hop.
I wouldn't think of that.
Which I think would be just a heck of a lot of fun, but really trying to mix it up and to bring generations together, you know.
Sounds great.
513-419-7100 to join us, and we're joined now by Patricia in Delhi. Hi, Patricia.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Hi, I wanted to say hello to Mike Maloney. Mike, this is Pat Spatzer. I worked with you at the Urban Appalachian Council, and when we were down in the railroad clerk's building, we set up the Coal Miners Treatment Center at Good Sam. It's nice to hear from you, and I just wanted you to know I'm still a good old Appalachian. I teach quilting all the time.
It's great to hear from you, Pat. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Patricia. We appreciate the call. 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And Debbie, I think you were talking earlier about family is one of the strengths of the Appalachian community. How big a role does family play in the community?
Well, I think it plays a very strong role. Certainly, you know, my family is from southeastern Ohio and eastern Kentucky, you know, migrated here. My dad grew up in the East End. I grew up in Middletown. I spend a lot of time on the road going back and forth to Middletown because family is just a real important part of my life. And I think that that's pretty descriptive of most of us.
And that's it's true not just of urban Appalachians and rural Appalachians. In working class neighborhoods, one spends most of one's life in contact with family. You can go for a week and not see family members unless it's at work or at church. That's changing, but That was true for the Irish when they were concentrated in neighborhoods and for the Germans, and it's true for working-class African-Americans. And so it's not unique to us. It's part of being working-class and from a traditional culture background.
Mm-hmm. Nate, did you want to add to this?
Yes, I just had a story that I thought would illustrate the kind of Appalachian family connection. One of the ladies I talked to for my oral history project is a 73-year-old woman who was born in Perry County, Kentucky, and she now lives in Lower Price Hill, where she's lived for since 1954. And over the course of our interview, which was about an hour and a half, two hours long, she has six kids. And over the course of the interview, when I was listening back to these files, there are all these periodically throughout the interview, the phone would ring, and it would be one of her kids calling in on her. And this happened like three or four times throughout the interview. They were just checking in. It was just, you know, a normal day, just finding out how mom is doing. And then she spoke about the neighborhood in Lower Price Hill and how anytime there was a death in the neighborhood, she would cook food, and they would have a potluck. And family is really just in speaking to her then and since, family is her entire life. And in speaking with her family, they're all very supportive of her and one another. And a number of them showed up to the performance of my piece, which she featured prominently in, at least her stories did. So that's just a little anecdote to illustrate that.
And one of the things I think about when you say that, Nate, and when I think about Lower Price Hill and other Appalachian communities, both urban and rural, is that the definition of family starts to get pretty broad, too. I imagine that you've become mm-hmm. you've probably become part of her family as well. And it's I really do see how those kind of family networks and family loyalty and faithfulness gets extended to the wider community that people connect with as if we are family.
And Nate mentioned Lower Price Hill. Do we have what would be considered Appalachian neighborhoods in Cincinnati? Do we define them that way? Do we break them down that way?
We can list 10 neighborhoods that have heavy concentrations of Appalachians, not necessarily majority Appalachian, in Cincinnati, and then all the communities in Claremont County and east are Appalachia, and there are big concentrations throughout the area in northern Kentucky, Newport, for example, in Hamilton and Middletown, and all the way up to Xenia. So that 500,000 people, it's probably, if you include all the way from northern Kentucky to Xenia, maybe 800,000. So it's a huge world.
There's probably more Appalachians living up in Cincinnati now than there are in many of the communities that we left in eastern Kentucky.
I was amazed by the figure of a 500,000 in the area, Paula. That really took me by surprise.
It's true. And it's, you know, and some people did kind of move away from the roots and maybe don't have that same sense of connection. But many of us still do, particularly if you kind of push on it a little bit and ask the right questions like Nate has done and with his oral histories.
Debbie, what do you think is the future for what do you think the future is like for the Appalachian community in this area?
I like to think that we continue our connections with each other in very important ways. Of course, we are assimilating, you know, to the broader culture as well. Through the UACC, we are attempting to build our network, you know, to keep our cultural values alive, our connections with each other alive, and so that work is important to the three of us and to Steve, who called in, and Nate. And you know, many others.
Well, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
The founding director of the Urban Appalachian Community Coalition in Cincinnati and head of the Appalachian Area Office of Catholic Social Services of Southwestern Ohio, Mike Maloney, leader of the Urban Appalachian Community Coalition Arts Community, poet laureate of Cincinnati, and author of books related to urban Appalachia, Pauletta Hansel, president of the Appalachian Studies Association and conference chair for the ASA's 2018 conference, Debbie Zorn, and composer Nate May, who has a new composition titled State, A Testimony to Urban Appalachia.